Chapter 15. Which way you were going had nothing to do with it, of course, and the first meaningful road he noticed was State Route 413. And that worked you slightly east towards South Jersey, and you ran into 295, 276, the interchange near Trenton. All good at this point, though Chris didn't stop physically sweating until an hour later when he pulled off for a bite to eat at a place called Plymouth Meeting. Woo. One thing that it had been in his favor was the tank's henchmen likely had come to Bucks County from somewhere else after Lorraine made that call, as opposed to being down the block. Though Chris didn't leave her phone like he said he would, but that didn't matter. The somewhere else, again, could be Philadelphia, New York City, or Atlantic City, whereas if you had similarly dealt with the tank in one of those places, the exit strategy might not have been as smooth. You never know, and Chris reminding himself for the umpteenth time that you can't script this shit, that line was getting old. When he came out of the restaurant, it was dark and windy, and it was already dusk when he went in, but now it was pitch black, no moon tonight or stars you could see either. Not the optimum evening, in other words, to be heading across Pennsylvania on one of these highways that didn't help you out much with the artificial lighting, and you'd have to pay attention. But Chris was revved up, nothing gained tonight by checking in somewhere and not being able to sleep, so he kept on driving, and by 3 a.m. he required a cup of coffee. And that wasn't going to be easy, so he opened the windows and blasted the radio, what few stations he could tune in, and it occurred to him this was a throwback to a couple of road trips 25 years ago, and it sustained him until 5:30 when it started getting light and you could smell the wet grasses being warmed up, and he found a convenience store and stood outside for a while, looking over some fairly idyllic valley that had come into focus the last 20 minutes. He'd picked up a couple of interstate maps in the convenience store. They still sold them there, which seemed to be a dying industry for sure, the physical maps, and he opened one on the picnic table they had outside near the gas pumps. Geez, he'd screwed up pretty good overnight. Not that it mattered much, but at some point he veered onto 79 and had driven several hours largely due south into the heart of West Virginia and was headed for Tennessee at the moment. Again, which was fine, it did point out how you could get confused at night, and you had to give credit to the over-the-road truckers, those guys likely never working on enough sleep, yet rarely making a wrong turn like this, even on a pitch-black night. You could see on the map that the Monongahela National Forest to the right, which you definitely negotiated, and yes, sir, pretty darn curvy through there, and obviously beautiful country too, which would explain this lush, green, untamed expanse he was soaking in the distance this morning from the convenience store. Detroit, as Chris was calculating it, using the unexact finger method on the map. From here, you were talking 350, 400 miles, and if you're going 65 all the way, you could do it in half a day, couldn't you? Except from here, you were on the small stuff until at least Columbus, and even there, not really. You needed to hit Farley before you finally found an interstate that ran you toward Detroit. So no, don't be a hero again. Go halfway and hope you catch your friendly 56-year-old unknown relative Marlon Studebaker up there tomorrow. And Chris got back in the Malibu, and it was a good day of driving, clear and bright and crisp out there, and he settled on Dakota, Ohio for the night, a bit north of Delaware, Ohio, for gosh sakes, and he noticed this other places too. Why name towns after states? Though they had their reasons. Not until Chris found a motel did he realize the extent of how shot he was, not just the staying up all night, but the reverberation from the encounter with Nick and the unexpected surprise of the fourth wife, Lorraine, making her appearance. Thinking about it, it was a one-man operation down there in the basement office, so Lorraine probably just dropped in, end of the day, a Friday evening. It could have been messier if the tank had an actual secretary emerging from that restroom who might not have understood the nature of Tank's businesses and those of his associates and issues that sometimes arose. Lorraine clearly did. You had to give her that. She was going to keep it in-house, and if the police happened to get involved later, so be it. Chris had taken a page out of Ned's book, of course, the mechanics of it, as related to Ralph, meaning the wire seemed decent. And Chris found a Home Depot on the way out here one night in Wyoming and had gone in there with a mental list of supplies. Roll of wire, wire cutters, thick gloves. He wasn't sure he'd need any of it, but you tried to plan ahead, and he'd thrown the Home Depot bag in the trunk and hadn't thought about it again until he was closing in on Bucks County. Anyhow, when Chris got in the room in Dakota, Ohio, and saw that bed, he collapsed right on top of it, no turning back any covers, and he barely got one shoe off and slept for 6 hours. It was after 9 when he got up, re-energized, starved, all that good stuff, and he figured why not see what, if anything, is cooking in town. There was a lot, actually, a couple of groups on foot, heading for the main drag bar scene, yucking it up pretty good, and carrying baseball equipment, which likely meant an adult softball league breaking up. There were couples strolling around as well, some old folks sitting on benches, even little kids riding scooters and bikes around. And this is how it should work, Chris was thinking. You're brutalized all winter by the weather. When it's over, get your asses out there. He compared the scene to Petaluma, for example, where he lived once, bigger than this place, but also a family community, so not totally different. And there you could do stuff all year outside, no problem. So consequently, there was no thrill in it, no incentive, and you didn't run across anything like this. The big thing tonight in Dakota, though, was the high school prom. It always seemed early, didn't it? April still? Chris remembered his own being in June, about a week before they got the heck out of there for good. But things were different, apparently. Again, like with the kid, Pike, in Beacon, Chris found himself envying the whole shebang, the event and the kids both, so much ahead of them, life, hopefully, not having dealt any big blows so far, your stress level centered on having the right friends and getting invited to the right parties. At the moment, there were clusters of the prom kids milling around Main Street, some getting in and out of limos, but you assume the official prom wasn't underway yet. But then again, it seemed about that time. Chris asked an older couple sitting on a bench. They go to a hall, right? Or the school gym or something? Before the night's over? The husband shook his head. Used to, he said. That dried up. Going back, I'll say 6 years. Sorry, Chris said. What dried up? Way it worked. They had an insurance uptick. The school said, forget it. We can't afford it. He means, the wife chipped in, they had to cancel using the gymnasium because the liability folks made it impossible. Right, the husband said. So they scrambled and, you know where the Grange Lodge is? Nope, sorry, Chris said, I'm a visitor. The guy said, welcome to town then. It don't matter anyhow about the Grange, other than they held it there instead and it didn't work out. Ah, Chris said. Eldon's referring to the underage drinking, the wife said. The lack of appropriate supervision. It got out of hand. The police came. There was an altercation. Sergeant Wayne got his skull fractured. Maybe, Eldon said. They played it up big. The fact was the man spent a night in the hospital under observation. Take it however you like. But you're saying, Chris said, it never recovered? The traditional prom? Eldon nodded. Everyone whining. That point forward, both sides. The school worked out the insurance finally. But now they let the kids take a vote. And like I say, last 4 or 5 years, they've been voting it down. They'd rather mess around on their own, as you can see. And save $75, of course, the wife said. Screw that, Eldon said. You only come around once, but it's all different today. The kids, they got no ties to tradition. They don't give a crap. Eldon spit, which was a bit unexpected, but you could see his point and appreciate his passion. Chris said, what happened to the officer who got assaulted? Is he still on the job? That's the other part, the wife said. Sergeant Wayne committed suicide 3 Christmases ago. It left a sour taste all around. You're kidding, Chris said. Martha, Eldon said, will you stop with that, please, for once? There was mental health issues the man was dealing with. You know as well as I. Way more deep-rooted than some kid hitting him on the side of the head with a beer bottle one night. Martha looked at Chris and upturned her palm slightly. It's something we agree to disagree on, she said. They watched the continuing action for a while, and Chris said, let me pose something to you out of left field, if I might. If it throws you off, please feel free to leave it alone. Son, Eldon said, nothing throws me off. Well, Chris said, if you got robbed one day, not your house like a break-in, but you directly, face-to-face, and I don't mean you specifically, but if this happened to someone. You ain't given me much to work with so far, Eldon said. Though you haven't quite lost me either. Chris smiled. You had to like him. He said, what I'm getting to, should this guy just let it go? So I'm clear, Martha said. Someone was robbed of their belongings, but not injured. He's telling you that, Eldon said. If someone got strong-armed on the street, like we got going out in Toledo when the floodgates opened and that place went down the tubes. Pretty much that's it, yeah, Chris said. Let's say the guy gets a weapon stuck in his face. Firearm, Eldon said. And he got away with it, you're saying? Yes, I think so. Both those. I'd string him up, Eldon said. Long as someone didn't get to him first. Mind you, those types. Plenty of enemies already in the loop. Eldon, Martha said, please don't lash out irrationally. Chris said, you take it into your hands, you're saying, though. You wouldn't let the system do its job? What system? Eldon said. What are they going to do about it? Some poor guy looking up a hollow barrel, seeing his life flash before him? Your system going to make it up to him? I don't think so, Chris said, not necessarily. Except, Eldon said, you're not sure. Son, I can see right through you. Pardon me, but you and I's crapping on opposite shitholes. All right, honey, Martha said. The man is simply posing a, what's the word I'm looking for? A chance encounter? A hypothetical, maybe, Chris said. Thank you, she said. That's exactly it. Certainly nothing to get worked up about in real life. If you say so, Eldon said, smiling for the first time, and pinching Martha's cheek, and Chris wondering, the way it was in the old days, the high school prom business, if they were an item back then too. But you left it alone for tonight. The old guy Eldon had freaked him out a little bit about these unknown big cities. Not that a place like Toledo was a real big city, or particularly scary. But that was the point. Detroit was both those things. Why would Marlin select there when you had the whole country to work with to settle down? Of course, Chris's lasting images of Detroit were the photos of the burned-out sections, and it had been a while now, and he supposed if they were successfully gentrifying places like Flatbush in Brooklyn, where you once assumed there was no hope, then why not Detroit, perhaps? Back in the motel last night, he'd spent a little time on GEDmatch, the genealogy site that was the center of all this current law enforcement commotion and which Mark had likely been tearing his hair out over. Until he figured out Chris's deal, which unfortunately was still a work in progress. One thing Mark had reminded Chris, he or anyone could log on with a fake account and roam around, search. Not for DNA, not that deep a search, but simple non-DNA family tree stuff. So you had Marlon Studebaker, 56, Detroit, Michigan, and in GEDmatch, there were a bunch of other connected Studebakers most of them in the upper Midwest as well, and Chris committed 3 or 4 to memory, so he'd hopefully be able to talk his way into Marlin's door. He rolled into Motown Saturday before noon, the first couple sections not great, but frankly, a step up from even the Tenderloin in San Francisco, and Marlin's neighborhood, Son of a Gun, was actually pretty okay. And luckily, pinpointing his address had been a piece of cake, a simple white pages search, and there he was front and center, and the age matching to cinch it. And no surprise that someone who offers their DNA to the world as public fodder wouldn't check a box that kept their name and address out of the old-fashioned phone book. The guy lived near Greektown, a lively stretch not far from old downtown, and in a high-rise building that was probably considered luxurious in its day, say the 1970s, and now was rougher around the edges, metal windows that could use the upgrade to double panes, shabby terraces, a fountain down below not working currently with big rust stains in the pond. But you had a doorman, an underground parking it looked like, and what more could you need? Chris announced himself as Rich Studebaker, and the doorman did the intercom thing and buzzed Chris no problem through the main door. The apartment was 6 stories up, most of the units overlooking a central atrium, and that thing had seen better days as well. A guy opened up, and Chris sure hoped it was Marlin, and it was. And a weird thing happens. When they shake hands, instead of letting go, Marlin pulls him in and embraces him. "I apologize for that," he said, "but it's not every day I meet a new Studebaker. Damn." "How on earth did you find me, Rich?" Chris's first thought was, wow, maybe there really is a Rich Studebaker out there that this guy's been waiting on, and that he should have reviewed that Gedmatch family tree a bit more carefully and chosen a better first name. But, oh well. Marlin sits him down and right away is bringing out the schnapps and the little glasses. Oh boy, shots now. And Chris could see they'd have to go along with it. And would there be a chance to distract this guy? They talked about politics and lifestyle issues, and fortunately Marlin never asked where he was from, since if Chris answered Duluth, for example, that might not go over as well if Marlin was assuming he was the Rich Studebaker from Champaign, Illinois. Or maybe it would have made no difference and Marlin never knew of a specific Rich, but just enjoyed all family dynamics, as the more the merrier. They talked a little business and finance, and dang, this guy was retired already from the auto industry. 31 years at GM, the last 12 with a corner office and a personal secretary, and Marlin matter-of-factly told you he started there right out of high school in the mailroom. This was all interesting enough, and Marlin was admittedly someone you could admire. But that wasn't why we were here. We were here, Chris reminded himself, to see about me avoiding possible arrest and prosecution and implementation of the electric chair. "Changing it up for just a second," Chris said. "You wouldn't have a computer handy, would you, by chance? I mean, it doesn't have to be right now, no emergency. I'm going to Scottsdale next week is all. And I want to confirm a couple things, which I hate doing on my phone, being on the road and all." Marlin said of course he did, and to come here, and please make yourself comfortable. And Chris followed him into the bedroom, and Son of a Gun, being acutely polite it was turning out, closes the door to give him privacy and says, "Shout if you need something." You weren't surprised Marlin might be old school, and yep, you had to turn on the computer and wait for it to warm up and load, which wasn't breaking any records. And finally, Chris got on and went to Gedmatch. And now, the moment of truth, the only reason he diverted himself the 400-odd miles to get here, could you log on? Meaning as Marlin. So there was a sign-in screen, and you stuck the cursor into the user box and hovered, and then clicked the blank white, and you're waiting for autofill to do its thing, and it's not looking good. Chris reloaded the page and tried it again, and zip, all blank, nothing showing up, not even a tease. He thought of one more thing that had bailed him out once when he was trying to buy a spec tennis paddle off eBay and couldn't hook up his PayPal account. And that was that in Google Chrome, which Marlon did have going, if you were lucky, there was a way to find this stuff, your saved passwords. Chris Googled how to accomplish that. And you had the usual 8 steps at least. Settings, advanced, security, yada yada. And that still got him nowhere, but in the search results, someone pointed to an updated method, and he messed around with that enough to where it actually worked. And Marlon's password for GEDmatch was shown as BiggestHam1964. Wow. So Chris hustled back onto the GEDmatch screen, forgetting just one important component that you, of course, need the goddamn username as well. Let's see, maybe just try Marlon or Marlon Studebaker, all one word. But that was going to be silly, and Chris thought of Google itself, that people often signed into that if they've been working their Gmail or whatnot, and Chris angled the cursor to the M in the purple circle in the upper right corner of that screen, and he held his breath and hovered, and there was Marlon's email address. So for God's sakes, plug that in, and he did, and added the discovered password, and he clicked enter, and there was that ultra-satisfying moment where the web server was doing something positive on your behalf, and Chris was in. It wasn't user-friendly in there. It felt more like a high school class project in the infancy of the information superhighway. Lots of raw data floating around and crude links that were straight out of the earliest HTML days. But Chris had done a dry run back in the motel last night under his fake account, and he knew his way around. Sort of. The main thing he remembered, you find your user profile first, you click around in there until you get your DNA profile, all the you and yours, meaning Marlon's now obviously, and then you do 6 things. 1, you locate your DNA kit in your profile. 2, you highlight said DNA kit. 3, you check a box next to your DNA kit, indicating you are the authorized representative of said DNA kit and you want it deleted. 4, you answer yes when it asks, are you sure? 5, you hit enter and delete the motherfucker. 6, you log off and sign back in and make sure it worked. Marlon called in from the other room when Chris was taking care of step 4. Would he like club soda and some rich crackers and cheese? And Chris called back that he loved some in a minute and was almost done reviewing the Scottsdale itinerary. Step 6 was a success. And if Marlon had offered champagne at that point as well, this would have been more than fine. And he shut the computer back down and went back in the other room and spent another 1.5 hours with the guy. He wasn't even sure he had it straight what Marlon was in relation to the real him, Chris Seeley. Forget the rich person. But he thought it was third cousins or worse, he, Chris, and Marlon. And now that he could relax and concentrate better, he tried to size up this guy. Was there any Seeley or Weeding, his mom's side, family traits evident in him? And Chris honestly couldn't see anything there, but again, he was a nice man and someone you might look up again. Who knows? Chris did feel bad double-crossing him with the computer and GEDmatch stuff, and he asked Marlon if he could donate to his favorite charity. Marlon said, what for? And Chris didn't want to get into a thing, and he was getting itchy to get back on the road, and he put a couple $100 on the coffee table and told Marlon whichever charity or whatever, period. Don't worry about it. It's all good.